RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
He's been on our program before, Matthew Pippenberg, a partner at Von Graer's, a leading precious metal advisory service. The conviction that precious metals provides the most reliable and longer-term protection against potential systemic risk led Matt to join Von Graer's, and they're based in Switzerland. Also the author of Gold Matters with Yvonne Von Graer's, Matthew is a graduate of Brown, BA, Harvard, MA, and the University of Michigan, JD, Juris Doctor. So, Matthew, it's nice to have you back. It's been a while, October last year. Here we are now in, past the midpoint of 2024, considerable time on from our last chat. Yeah. How do you explain where the world's at right now compared to however many months ago that was, getting on for a year?
Well, look, again, as the facts change, opinions can change. And since we spoke in October, again, I'm not trying to repeat myself, but the facts are just getting worse. So my opinions are just getting more entrenched. None of the conversation points we talked about in the past, whether it was de-dollarization, the dollar, gold markets getting narrow, debt levels and their impact on bond markets and hence interest rates and hence the cost of life for anyone in the world that's related to the U.S. dollar is just getting worse. And again, sounds gloom and doom, the classic gold narrative, but you really can't make this stuff up, whether you're looking at politics, whether you're looking at a very, very narrow tech-driven S&P, whether you're looking at a grotesquely overvalued bond market and a increasingly debased U.S. dollar that's inflate or die to pay sovereign bonds. Things are getting harder, not better, and they're accelerating at a faster pace, Paul. So I think whichever strand you want to pull on, whether it's politics, whether it's the S&P and the equity markets or credit markets or currency markets or gold markets or geopolitical risk and inflation risk, these are all on everyone's mind. I've been traveling. I've been in about 11 countries this year already, East, West, Canada, the U.S., Istanbul, South Africa, Singapore, London. It's the same conversation. It's the same stress points, same polarization, same increasing wealth inequality, same political confusion. So again, Paul, whichever strand you want to pull on, but my short answer is the facts are only getting worse. And the stresses are only getting worse, and the risks are only getting higher. And again, that's not what everyone wants to hear. And it's my view. It's pretty empirical. It's not just a gold view from Switzerland. You know, whether I talk to Jeremy Grantham, who's an equity expert out of Boston, or you listen to Jeffrey Gundlach, who's a bond expert out of California, or you talk to Thomas Hernig, who's a open-minded, honest Fed official, everyone has the same conclusion. So again, it's not the gloom and doom sensationalism that is so typical of the gold space. This is just empirical, sad reality, and we can get into that.
Yeah, navigating through this, it must be possible. How do you go about that?
Well, I think, again, it sounds so Pollyannish. The first thing is to try and be informed and not emotional. And again, we can all find the facts. They're getting harder and harder. And certainly when we could talk about the media, it's hard to get objective numbers or objective data. How you want to interpret that, of course, is up to each individual. There's a lot of heads in the sand. Again, the majority of the people I speak to are in the top 10%. So their concerns aren't the same as the rest of the 90%, which I live and breathe with and grew up with. So I look at both sides of it. The concerns of people with hundreds of millions are different than people that are worrying to get through the month. And yet, so what is painful to one class, which is annoying to lose money to inflation or to be tied up in illiquid credit pools and worried about interest rates, that's very academic for the uber wealthy. For the average citizen anywhere in the world, these aren't just data points that they don't have time to look at. These are felt every week, every month. And again, I talk to people, my neighbors who are farmers. They're not hedge fund managers or gold executives. They literally have to plan their month and their week with groceries, gas prices, toll booth costs, taxes, and inflation. So it's really not funny when you're just trying to live month to month. It's somewhat disturbing to people who have investable assets and lots of net worth. But yeah, everyone's feeling it, but certain people are feeling it a lot more. And I think the way to navigate it, I don't have an easy answer, Paul. You know, I would avoid a lot of risk. We can talk about the things I would avoid. Currencies are being debased to inflate away debt. Debt levels are at unsustainable levels everywhere in the world, not just in the U.S., but the U.S. is the ripple effect on every other currency. When you understand these things, between taxation and inflation, which is an invisible tax, which is misreported and misunderstood and manipulated, and that's not sensational, that's a fact. There is no doubt you have to at least see this and feel it. You can get angry, you can get emotional, you can get political. Yes, you can buy gold or other real assets to try and protect the purchasing power of your currency, but that isn't really a simple answer for people trying to pay rent or tuition or groceries. So honestly, I wish I had an easy answer or a positive outlook. Markets can go up if interest rates go down, but you're measuring your returns in a currency, whether it's in New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, America, or Canada, you're measuring that that return, hopefully a positive one, in a currency that's getting more and more diluted, like an ice cube. And whether you're a millionaire or just worried about rent, you're still losing purchasing power. And again, not a gold bug argument. We don't have to talk about gold at all. It's just a simple objective fact. And a lot of people don't have the option of insuring their dying currency with bars and ounces and grams of gold. I get that. So to prepare for it, we can look at each silo of risk, whether you're looking to speculate in the markets or whether you're looking to preserve with precious metals or art or real estate, or whether you're just trying to be ready for what's coming and get political. Good luck with that and try and get a better political team to save this. But I don't think Santa Claus could save the debt problems, whether it's left, right, or center today. I think we're heading in, and we're already in my view, a recession in many parts of the world, including the U.S., certainly in the U.K., in China, in France, in Germany. The U.S. won't admit it, but we are. You know, it's just sadly not getting better. And again, the markets can go up in a very Pavlovian way if interest rates do come down. All of 2024, when we last spoke, I said the Fed was getting more dovish. They were just talking dovish about cutting rates. They actually haven't cut them yet. They could in September. They probably will. That can be a very good tailwind for a stock market anywhere in the world. The U.S. stock market, the S&P, is kind of the one that everyone looks at. It's really a tech ETF, 20% of its market value is in three names. The NASDAQ is 50% of its market value in five or six names. So it's a very narrow market. It's very dangerously narrow. Even it can go up on lower rates for a short period of time. But I believe, Paul, that all markets mean revert at some point, which means they go drastically down if they're overvalued. Gold market is still undervalued, so it will go drastically up for a manifold amount of reasons. Yeah. But the stock market is extremely narrow. It's led by a few names. That's always dangerous. I saw this movie before in the dot-com bubble in 2000. The credit markets, when measured against inflation, as Gundlach said, you'd have to be an idiot to buy a sovereign bond, because measured against inflation, you're literally losing money. It's a negative return because you can't beat the coupon on a bond cannot beat actual inflation. So stocks and bonds are overvalued and not really giving you much. So a lot of investors, the fancy lads, are going further and further on the risk branch to get any kind of yield, which just means junk bonds, crappier credits. And these things called private credit pools, which Gundlach calls the weapons of mass destruction. It's blood sport. A lot of families that have money are going into these black boxes that have capital calls. And yet, you know, they're locked. You can't get out. You can't get liquid. You don't know how they're being valued. They're just bad loans packaged together and marked to whatever the portfolio manager says they are. They're not marked to market. So I see schools like Harvard University with a $60 billion endowment, which is broke because they can't get liquidity. That is kind of a metaphor for the higher net worths who have all this paper wealth, but it's locked into these credit pools, which are illiquid, and their valuations are completely fictional. That is, to me, a real risk. And Gundlach, not just a gold guy, Gundlach's a bond king, sees the same thing. So again, Paul, wherever I look, I see heightened risk, people chasing risk without a respect for, chasing reward, but without a respect for risk. And I see a lot of kind of wringing of the hands, even in the high net worth space, but a real ignorance to the risks that are out there, or not wanting to see the risks. But even if you could avoid those risks, which very few, including the fancy lads and the fancy families, very few can avoid these risks. But even if you could somehow thread the needle and get through these bond market risks and these credit risks and these debt risks and these narrow tech-driven meme stocks, even if you can sell at the right time, or even catch some of the reward on a low rate driven spike or blow off top, you're still measuring your return in a currency that is losing value every minute, every second, every day. Again, not fable, but fact. And no one wants to discuss this. Certainly the media doesn't want you to understand this. The Federal Reserve doesn't want you to understand this, and they'll talk around it. But I'm sorry, I'm no fun, as I say, at a cocktail party. But facts.
Should we wind it up now?
Yeah, just go swimming.
Note, you know? On that note, it sounds like we're kind of heading for the wall.
Well, you know, as I see it, we've hit that wall already. And again, it depends on who you're talking to. If you've got hundreds of millions of dollars and you go from hundreds of millions of dollars to just 100 million, that's a sad story, but that's not the real world. People keep saying, when's the recession coming or when are we going to have pain? But again, you know, when I look at it, and I talk about America, we said this before, you're in New Zealand, I'm an American living in Europe, traveling the world for clients that are all over the world, Asia, Africa, Western Europe, Northern Europe, Southern Europe, Canada, the U.S. But you still have to look at the U.S. dollar because it's still the world reserve currency and it will be for a while, a long while. And you still have to look at the U.S. markets and the U.S. Treasury and what happens in America when America, you know, gets sick, the rest of the world catches a cold. So you have to look at America based on every recession indicator that the smart people are looking at, not the media. It's a very big difference. You know, you've got M2 growth, which has gone negative. You've got a Conference Board of Leading Indicators, which is at recessionary levels for months. You've got a yield curve that's inverted and then re-inverting. That's always a sign of recession. You've got credit card debt in the U.S. It's 23% average rate. That's immoral. Delinquencies are at all-time highs right now. You've got bankruptcies at all-time highs. You've got layoffs at all-time highs. That's not reported. They keep saying labor is strong, not trying to spoil the party. But labor is a lagging indicator.
I saw a report recently where the job numbers were given, and then they were scaled back. So they were reported as, 200,000 new jobs that the U.S. I'm referring to. I mean, the next month they came with revised figures, about 100,000 less, but the revised figure was hardly reported. So the impression was left that it wasn't so bad.
Well, again, this is where it gets wonky, and then the conspiracy theory label is thrown in, and again, the sensationalism is thrown in. I mean, it's a known fact in Wall Street that inflation is misreported by at least 50%, because what the Bureau of Labor Statistics does is they reroute and they reweigh things differently. But if we use the same scale to measure inflation that we used to use in the Volcker era, and even Larry Summers was a former Harvard president and kind of a bad guy trying to revive his image, and a former Treasury Secretary, said if you use the 1983 metrics, we'd be at 18%, not 3.7. So inflation is a bogus lie. Again, that's a strong statement. But labor is even more wonky. And we have this thing called the BLS uses what they call U3 and U6 employment. And they use what's called the civilian labor force to measure who's employed. But what they don't tell you, what it's not in the footnotes, is that tens of millions of people aren't even in that labor force. They've just given up. So in America, we have the NBA, which is basketball players, which are typically very tall people. And how we measure employment, like we measure inflation, is basically like measuring the number of tall people, but only using the NBA. So you're really not getting honest data. And again, that sounds like some zero hedge conspiracy thinking crazy author. But again, I'm not in my mother's basement doing Google searches. I'm a former hedge fund manager. I look at currencies and bond markets. I'm serious about this stuff. And everyone, whether it's, again, Jeremy Grantham or Jeffrey Gundlach, or frankly, honest Fed officials, will say this. So it's not a conspiracy theory. It's not fake news. The labor data is useless and the inflation data is dishonest. And again, that sounds sensational. But so again, when I look at labor, when I look at leading indicators, when I look at wonky things like yield spreads and bond markets and yield curves, we are technically in a recession. We just don't want to admit it. And if the U.S. is in recession, that makes the U.S. desperate. And that makes the U.S. broke because they have to monetize or fiscally spend more than they earn in tax receipts or GDP. When they do that, they debase the dollar. They take out more debt. They issue more IOUs. Nobody wants the U.S. Treasury anymore. So the Fed has to print money to pay for them. They don't have direct QE anymore. They use all kinds of tricks in the reverse repo markets and the Treasury General Account and all these wonky tricks on Wall Street called supplementary leverage ratios, which would glaze your eyeballs to get into. But there's trillions in fake liquidity that isn't direct mouse click money printing right now going on in the U.S. All this is a way of saying, Paul, that they're debasing the currency, they're inflating the currency, they're diluting the currency to monetize a debt that they can never repay. And that affects every currency in the world. And that affects people in Wellington. It affects people in Sydney. It affects people in Johannesburg. It affects people in Berlin. It affects people in Minnesota. So we are in a currency crisis because we're in a debt crisis. I can't overstate that enough. It's a slow frog boil. We all feel it. You know, whenever a country, nation, whether it's an oligarchy, a democracy, a monarchy throughout history goes into debt, they debase their currency to monetize that debt. That creates inflation, that creates social unrest. And then we get political extremism, censorship, which God knows New Zealand knows.
We do.
From the extreme left or the extreme right. So, again, not fun conversation pieces. And how to solve that problem is really difficult.
I've got a question on gold, and this might be overly simplistic from just a guy on the street here. That's me. We have... heard here of a couple of significant gold finds into the billions potentially on ounces that people think are there. Should we start like going crazy digging for gold if we've got it?
If you've got it, absolutely. And again, I am not a mining guy. And believe me, anyone who's been in the mining space for the last 10, 15 years has gone through a lot of pain, because mining is different in a sense, because mining is also a stock, because it's about the management and the operation of those mines. And there's a famous quote by Mark Twain, "What is a gold mine? It's a hole in the ground with a liar standing in front of it." In other words, you know, you have to pick your mining stocks very carefully. And there are guys like Rick Rule or Ross Beaty or Frank Giustra and others who know how to do this very well. And you can tack and track them. Absolutely. Gold is undoubtedly, for so many reasons, becoming a reserve asset. It's what people save in and they spend in their local currencies. It's a tier one asset as of last year by the Bank of International Settlements, right next to the U.S. Treasury. But unlike the U.S. Treasury, gold actually holds its value. It's of infinite duration and you know, finite supply, whereas a sovereign bond is of a finite supply or finite duration and infinite supply. The U.S. is not talking about this out loud, but central banks are dumping U.S. treasuries net since 2014 and buying physical gold. The BIS has made it a tier one asset. It is replacing the U.S. treasury as reserve asset. That's not a gold bug statement. That's a reality. When you see central banks dumping treasuries and buying gold, that's like an army preparing for battle. There is a currency battle. Gold is slowly but surely replacing the dollar. In net settlements among the BRICS, in the oil trade last year and this year, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, they're stacking gold. Russia's stacking gold since 2008. Again, not gold bug arguments. Watch where the hockey puck is going. These countries are stacking gold for a reason, because they're moving away from the dollar, which is debased and unloved, and the U.S. Treasury, which is distrusted since we weaponized it in 2022. There's slow forces that are just gaining momentum. Mining stocks are undervalued right now compared to the current spot price of gold. The problem with mining stocks is, how do you pick them? How do you get the right ones? And for frankly, I'm not here to give advice on that, A, because I legally can't, and B, because I don't know enough about specific mining stocks. As a sector, I think mining stocks, if carefully chosen and patiently held, will reward extravagantly but infrequently. And you have to have a long patience threshold and a good due diligence and a good mining expert or confidence in that. But absolutely, the countries that have the most natural resources, whether it's oil or silver or gold or copper or uranium or other needed, you know, real assets, if you hold that in the long term, you're going to be far better repaid in real terms than you are in stocks, bonds, or currencies. And so, yes, the short answer is pick them carefully, but hold them patiently, and you will be rewarded, in my opinion, because gold, whether you like it or not, whether you're gold bug or not, and I know people have heard it all from the gold guys. But again, I talk to people who are, you know, risk asset traders in stocks and bonds. I talk to former Fed officials. I talk to DC politicians. And what are they doing privately? What are they doing in Switzerland? They're stacking gold.
Sounds like some sort of reset will have to take place. I have no concept of what that could be. Do you?
Well, it's interesting. There's a really brilliant dollar debate. A guy named Brent Johnson, who had this milkshake theory in 2019, where the dollar, just because it's base money and because it's 80% of FX reserves and the base of the derivative markets and the euro dollar markets and every other country outside of the U.S. has to lend currencies into existence, lend dollars into existence. The net is that the dollar will be the last to fall, and it is the most important currency. And in a lot of ways, he's right. And he said, though, interestingly, that the only way the dollar ends is violently or militarily. And yeah, that was in 2019. You fast forward to 2024, and again, this may sound sensational, but things are ending violently and militarily, especially since we weaponized the dollar, as we discussed last time. When we weaponized the dollar in 2022, that was a seismic shift in geopolitics, currencies. No one trusts the U.S. Treasury or the dollar in the same way when the U.S. can simply freeze your FX reserves or take away your SWIFT access. So the BRICS are now consolidating their net settling trades outside of the dollar. Saudi Arabia, the UAE are net settling oil purchases outside of the U.S. dollar. Now, oil is extremely important. I would say that base money is not the key force of the U.S. or the euro or the global economy. Energy is. I don't think it's a coincidence that America has gone to war directly or indirectly in Iraq, in Syria, in Afghanistan, certainly in Lebanon, and in sanctions against Iran, et cetera. All our wars are basically not Operation Freedom, not Operation Democracy. It's the need to, you know, control the oil price, because oil is very important. Yeah. And so this violent change that Brent Johnson talked about or warned about, it won't be a peaceful Plaza Accord 2.0 where we reset debt and reset currencies. It's actually more violent. And what's happening now is violent. You know, again, when you look at Iraq or Libya or Syria, where we put troops on the ground directly or indirectly, or what we've done with the pipelines, I would argue that what we're seeing is a violent change post 2022. It is a military change.
Also, so the Nord Stream, you know, blowing up Nord Stream is part of this, is it?
It's part of this more subtle agenda. And again, energy is key. A country can't survive without energy. It's fueling everything from our cars to our industry. We're decades and decades away from carbon neutral, regardless of whether you're pro ESG or not. We are not even close to that. And right now, energy is key. And right now, you have to realize we just sanctioned Russia 2 years ago, but Russia is one of the greatest oil exporters. And what is China? One of the greatest world oil importers. Right. And what is Russia and China doing? China is buying Russian oil and paying for that in yuan, which Russia then uses to buy goods in China that were once made in America, and then net settling that in gold.
Wow.
And okay. Saudi Arabia and the UAE are members of the BRICS. So these are seismic, hidden, unspoken truths. The real fear of the West is what's happening right now in the oil trade. Oil is becoming the net settlement of choice. Saudi Arabia is giving fist pumps to Biden and shaking Xi's hand because China is a very big buyer of oil, and Saudi is a big provider, and so is Russia. The other thing that you have to understand is that the oil price, when it's measured against the dollar, the petrodollar, is extremely volatile. When the dollar went off the gold standard in 71, the volatility in oil price has changed dramatically. But in 1971, over 50 years ago, when we made the petrodollar deal with Saudi Arabia, the U.S. dollar was strong and the yields on the U.S. Treasury were high. But since that time, in 50 plus years, the U.S. dollar has lost 98% of its purchasing power against gold. Again, this is not a gold bug argument. It's very simple. Saudi Arabia sees the same thing that we see in Switzerland. The dollar is getting weaker. The U.S. Treasury is less trusted. They want to get outside the dollar slowly but surely in the oil trade. If that happens, that has massive impacts on the U.S. dollar demand, massive impact on political choices, military choices. It's not a coincidence that America's industrial military complex is everywhere right now. Yeah. Because I think the real issue isn't the dollar. The real issue is oil, the energy trade, and precious metals. And the BRICS are playing chess because China and Russia don't have to worry about election cycles. The U.S. and the West does. They're making short-term stupid decisions without thinking long-term. And when they sanctioned Putin, whatever you think of Putin, whatever you think of Zelensky, they shot themselves in the foot. And these other countries, which are natural resource rich, whether it's oil, whether it's gold, or whether it's copper, et cetera, are banding together, trading slowly but surely outside the dollar, net settling in gold. They have a Shanghai gold exchange that prices gold more fairly, and they're using gold to net settle trades. And they're going to use gold more in the oil trade. That will have huge, huge implications on the U.S. dollar. It makes America more desperate, and America embroils itself in more and more wars. These are not coincidences. They're all tied together, Paul.
I want to finish up with this question. Will a political change in the U.S. come November, but early next year, draw a line under any of this?
No, it doesn't matter, in my opinion. Again, I'm an American with an opinion. It's not the opinion. I do want to say it doesn't matter left or right. First of all, the United States is the divided states. Whoever wins, half the country is going to be furious. So that's never good. I'm not here to pom-pom Trump or criticize Biden, but we all saw that. Hopefully, most of us saw that debate. Biden is an open train wreck. Yeah. And I was in London a couple of weeks ago, and there was a lord from Parliament saying, boy, America has a choice between the demented and dementia. the pro-Trump camp, the pro-Biden camp may be offended. But regardless of who wins, as I joked earlier, even if Santa Claus wins, there's no way around the debt crisis, the currency crisis, the oil crisis, and the energy crisis. Whoever inherits this sandwich is going to have a lot of indigestion. What I see in America as an American who lived outside of D.C. and still goes back there frequently, and, you know, I think Nassim Tlaib said the opposite of success is in failure. It's name dropping, one of those wanker name droppers. But I do know a lot of people in D.C. in high positions, right, and I don't have a lot of respect for them. And I'll tell you this, again, regardless of who wins, what D.C. Is a machine. It is absolutely a machine. And everyone there who has a job, whether it's in the Defense Department, the Veterans Administration, the DOJ, the Intel Industrial Complex, they're far more worried about getting a promotion or keeping a job than they are worried about what's best for America. So they care. They'll vote for Biden even if he's brain dead, if it gives them a better chance to be Secretary of Defense or the head of the VA. And I know some of these people, and I hate to say it, they're prostitutes. They're thinking about self-interest, not public service. It's self-service. There are exceptions to this, of course, but the vast majority in D.C. are part of a machine where their party politics and their promotion and their security and even their egos are far more important than long-term thinking for what's best for America. And again, there are exceptions to that, but for the most part, they're agnostic to who is actually chosen, as long as their party's chosen, because then they stay in power. Power among the quote unquote public servants is really the motive. It is not public service, in my view. It's self-service. It's kind of like, I joke, if I wanted to join a country club and live and have power and have the nicest car and the nicest wines and show up every week as the club baller, but then hand that bill to my grandkids, no one will come visit me at the cemetery. That's an appalling way to behave. Yeah. But politicians, especially in the West, think about themselves first. They love themselves more than they love anything else, and they think about power. And so if you start with that premise, whoever is in power, left or right, is going to feed its machine, but they're not thinking 10, 20 years out. And that's the real problem. And that's the political reality. I don't see, even if you had a truly visionary, swamp cleaning, blunt speaking, a patriotic American who wanted to come into the White House and change things. And many would think Trump is that person, but even at that person is going to have a very hard time dealing with 120% debt to GDP, you know, $210 trillion in liability against a balance sheet of 190 trillion assets. There's going to have to be a frank discussion about austerity, about currency debasement, about risks that we've talked about. And it's going to be years to fix that, not one term. And then if you look at our CEO C-suites in Wall Street or in the great capitalism, which is feudalism, I mean, there was a statistic thing when my grandfather was at Ford, the median CEO to median employee ratio of salaries was 20-1. Within 20 years, it became 340-1. Today at places like Amazon, that ratio is 6,400-1. And in Bezos, his salary is 1.2 million to one. So there's something greedy in our quote unquote capitalism. There's something self-serving in our quote unquote politics. In our markets, 90% of the S&P's wealth is owned by the top 10%. So whether you look at markets, whether you look at Wall Street, whether you look in DC, there's clearly something broken and something short-sighted. And so, you know, again, to your answer, whoever comes into the White House is going to fix this.
Sounds like we should pray.
Find meaning in other things.
Yeah, but, on your knees. And that was a fantastic analysis. And thank you so much for sharing that information. Really interesting. And it could be more optimistic. That would be nice. But it's.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. We need to keep it real. Matthew Pipenberg, partner at Von Grayers in Switzerland. Thanks for beaming in and being with us again. And I look forward to chatting again. I'm sure we will.
I'm sure we will too, Paul.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.